Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles. I am your host, Ross Boland, here with my dear friend, Mr. Barrett Dudley.
Ross, do we have a tight seal here? I just want to make sure that we have a tight seal because I need a clean jar. Cade, how's the metadata looking? Are we memeing well? Ross, is the Instagram account, is it off the hook yet? Did we get the BoJack guys?
We're working on it.
Did we get the BoJack guys, though?
We're working on the BoJack guys.
I just want some witty, some cool tweets. I cannot have weevils in the flour sack.
Can't, though.
No weevils in the flour sack. Hey, how's it going, Ross?
All-time Kindle opening from Barrett there, and just a bevy of quotes from our new episode of Season 3 of Succession, which we're obviously here to talk about today. And let me just ask you up front.
Yeah.
How do you feel? How are you feeling to be back in Succession mode?
I feel, now that the premiere has aired and we're in the shit, mm-hmm. as it were, and mm-hmm. the story has begun, and we've launched into Season 3 now, I feel better. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't have... That does not mean that I feel unaffected by the lead up to Season 3, the hype that was built, the I'm going to call it cool signaling that was going on.
Social
media, and a variety of things like that. Those things have seeped into my brain a bit, where I'm teed up to find things that are potentially pitfalls with the show, and I've got them now. The big story, the overarching story, is that it's super super fun to be back.
Yes,
the show is beyond anything. It's just fun. Like, it is a fun show to watch. It is extremely enjoyable, and like, it's really hard. I'm not trying to take that away from it at all.
Of course not.
I thought episode one was good, with of course lots and lots of potential. When it's time to talk plot, I'll raise some red flags as Twitter was doing for the past week.
Yeah.
That's a meme reference, not a Succession reference.
I think the fun, it might be sort of all they have left right now. It's all they've left themselves with. Because, like you said, episode one was good. Wasn't great. And it felt like, it was almost like, it was littered with the quotables, many of which you just hit on, but similar to Ted Lasso season 2 episode 1, where you're almost like, okay, they're landing on pretty thick here. You know?
Yeah.
There were different points where you're like, okay, really, honestly, it's just Kendall is the only one who can get away with it over and over and over again. So once they start having other people drop lines that are just kind of heavy-handed, you're just like, oh,
This is
so Succession-y.
Right, and that's what we drew some concern around for the season, is like, this show is entering season 3 for the first time knowing that it's Succession now. And so, like, is it going to stretch too far to try to, like, bring you back into the world with, you know, 24 of those, like, Succession-isms that we love? Is it going to have Logan, you know, have drop 6 fuck offs in the first episode? Like, is it going to do these things to remind us all to prove its Succession, you know, to its Successionism or something like that?
Yeah.
Like, so it's in this weird zone. And I think that, you know, I'm not super worried after one episode because it was a 2-year layoff. So I think
Great point.
Of course, and we kind of guessed pretty much everything that we saw in the trailers, we saw in episode one. You know,
pretty much
grinding up the bones to make my bread, running off the fucking beanstalk, like all those little lines that we saw. Most of the stuff that was tossed around was
tell him I'm gonna run off the fucking beanstalk. Then. he heard you. He's kind of laughing, but not like a good laugh.
So you know, I or can we just jump in? You want to talk?
Yes, absolutely.
Some plot points?
I mean,
okay. Here's my big question. Big question for Succession. Is it lasting? Is it worthwhile? And will it remain fun if for as many seasons as this show runs, it's Kendall versus Logan?
No, of course not.
Right. And so this is season three of that.
It's the now. I was going to ask, my way of framing this up was, what's the biggest problem with the show?
And that, and for me, that's it. It's that, like, so far through two seasons, we've seen Kendall try to take on Logan head on, and Logan wins every time because he's Teflon. Logan. He's Logan.
Yeah,
and
but
Kendall, for like, for as funny as he is, and for like as good of, for as, you know, he can make one good move, right? He can get to Lisa Arthur before his dad does. He can, like, you know, he kicks the PR person out of the car before he says too much. Like, he makes little good moves, like he but then he can't string any of them together because he's also inviting his, you know, druggy girlfriend up to the apartment, and they're clearly doing coke.
His ex-wife's apartment.
If they're, yeah, his, yes, yes.
He just got divorced.
Pretty recently.
They're co-parenting.
They're co-parenting. But, like, you know, so we kind of know, and the show, whose side are you on? You on Logan's or Kendall's?
Kendall's.
Kendall's, right. That's, and you're supposed to be on Kendall's. Therefore, Kendall's probably not going to win again.
Right.
And so, like,
what are we doing still with the same matchup? But to my point in that matchup is, Logan, okay, we're talking about the unevenness of it. Doesn't really see, like, Logan just keeps crushing the guy, even if some of the moves in episode one seem to have gone Kendall's way.
Right.
Historically, you just spoke to it. Come on. But Logan, we've watched have like three strokes. Like, I thought the whole point of teeing it up the way they did with season one was like, this old man is health-wise on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
So watching still two seasons later, and like, you're like, not only is he alive, it almost never even comes up that like, this guy almost died and maybe isn't all there mentally.
Yeah, I think that, because I think they ran with that as more of like, you know, it was, oh, we thought, Kendall thought they had, he had him, but he didn't. He bounced back. It was, you know, and there's, I don't know who, but there are definitely like big wigs out there. I'll look it up and bring it back for next week. But there are some CEOs or executives or team owners or whoever that have had like four bypass surgeries, for example.
And are still going.
Yeah. And you're like, that dude should be dead.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Historically, I've heard about some of those,
yeah,
too.
So,
we had a vice president at one point that had like
and
three.
At the same time, it's like the A-minus plot or the B plot here, Jenny, is that all of the kids, we can find an episode now in every single season where all of the kids, what do they want? They want to be CEO. That's the same thing again,
yeah,
as well.
We already watched everything that happened in episode one.
Yes. And so it's like, how long can this show, like, and I'm almost to the point now where I'm like, okay, if this is going to be season three again, then Jesse Armstrong and the writing team is doing this on purpose. They are saying, this is the world that these people live in. They only care about these two things.
And we're not going to move past that.
And it's just, we're just shaking up the snow, the same snow globe every time. But this bubble never breaks because these people always remain in this world and they can't get out of it and they never leave it. And it's the same shit over and over again for their entire lives. But if that, I don't know how interesting that is after two amazing seasons and of dealing with that conflict.
I think we've officially bumped up against it. Not to the point where it's destroyed the show.
No.
But certainly where I think red flags went up for every single fan watching, like, wow, we're really just rehashing the same old, with a little couple extra, like a Lisa Arthur thrown in there and like an ex-wife's apartment meeting thrown in there and like some weird things. But mostly the exact same main conflict, which is that Logan is still in the way. Kendall has now made a major move to oust him.
Yep.
But guess what? Logan is going to go full, what does he say?
Beast.
Beast. Full fucking beast with it. And we've already seen that too. Like, it just feels like the same damn thing being rehashed. So the obvious complaints aside, I had a blast and was super stoked to be back.
Right.
But right. I left episode one majorly concerned with their ability to navigate a storyline through a third season if episode one only teed up more of the same.
Yeah, and in the, you know, the trailer for the coming weeks, like, it's pretty clear, unless they're totally throwing us for a loop, that this conflict is going to
be the focus,
consume the season.
And the lawsuit surrounding it.
Yeah, and that this back and forth between them of making moves will be the season. We're bringing in Alexander Skarsgård as something, and Adrian Brody's coming in as something.
Dude,
and like,
what was that about? Why? What? Whoa! It's, you know what it is to me. my prevailing theory at this point is that if you lose Brian Cox, you lose too much.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up, because the clear antidote for this, or seemingly the only way out, is to kill Brian, is to kill Logan.
And right? They're not willing to do that.
And they can't do that. He's the first name on the title screen, right? Like, this is when these guys get nominated for either best actor or supporting actor. I think it's him. I can't remember.
I get the idea it's his show.
Jeremy Strong won the Emmy last year, but I don't remember if that was for best actor or best supporting.
I'll check.
But Logan is definitely, Brian Cox is nominated in the best actor category
he did win for lead actor in 2020.
He did.
Excuse me,
okay.
Jeremy Strong.
So it's those two then are the ones that are nominated for lead. Everybody else gets nominated for supporting.
Okay.
So it's like,
but you have to think it's sort of seen on set even as like Brian Cox's show, right? Like it almost makes me think that's how they pitched it to him, right?
Right.
Because like, yeah, how in the hell are we on season three and this demented old man who is basically The Walking Dead at this point and routinely goes into thought spells where you're like, is he having a flashback or dementia right now?
Yeah.
He's still impossible to move. At this point, like, this man's kids are the biggest pussies. Like, there's three of them. One of them is a degenerate weirdo that looks like he's trying out to be the next Joker, but on the TV show version, whatever that Batman was called, Arkham or whatever the fuck. One of them is Shiv, who just, like, she might be the worst character on the show at this point. She went from my favorite character to my least favorite character because, look, Lisa Arthur doesn't even want to work with Shiv. Picking Kendall? Kendall? Fucking killed a guy.
But Kendall, you know, he sits down in a meeting and boy, he really wows you, Ross. You know, you don't even get a word in. Because he's so on one. He's electric out there.
The man is literally our former boss. It's insane. Well, dude, when he sat down with them and was like, all right, lay it out for me. And then before they can even get a word out, he's up and like talking again. I was losing it, like crying, laughing, because Jeremy Strong, that was a moment, an acting moment where I was like, holy shit, he's good.
He is.
Because you have to hit that perfect for it to not come off as like obvious comedic relief.
Right.
Right. Like,
yeah, you just have to lit. Right.
Like, for it to not come off cheesy, you have to crush that. And it was perfect.
Yeah.
It was perfect.
I feel like we're leading our conversation with concerns about the show, which I think is warranted. At the same time, the writing is so good.
It is phenomenal.
Asking for the BoJack guys, a couple of BoJack guys for your Twitter feed is, that line is so good.
It's like whoever's in charge of overarching narrative is struggling. Whoever's in charge of the dialogue is absolutely on fire. Like, they have their pulse, their heart, their finger on the pulse of the pop culture shit.
Absolutely.
Absolutely correctly. And when you're getting those kind of jokes mixed in, it's like industry jokes and shit. That's just, we love that.
Greg, still perfect. No comment.
That's podcaster porn. Is Greg going to grow a beard?
I don't know. Is he?
I saw a photo of Greg.
Maybe so.
With facial hair.
Out there getting the metadata. Kendall is trending. You know, he's number one trending.
I couldn't read it all.
Out trending tater tots.
I couldn't read it all, but I read as much of it as I could. The internet is quite big, would be like my main takeaway. Dude, he is so awesome. Him getting replaced as the metadata social media person. And then being like,
well, he's bookmarked some important tweets.
He wrote them all down.
He wrote them all down. She's like, we can find them. They're on Twitter.
And he's like, oh, yeah. No, they're all on Twitter. He's such a dumbass.
Nicholas Braun, I love him. The more I read about him, the more he's profiled. He owns like a dive bar in New York. Like, he sounds like one of the most fun dudes in Hollywood. He is also firmly put himself on like the Vince Vaughn track, where he can't be anything other than Cousin Greg now, it's not a bad life, but I feel a little bad for him because, you know, I made this joke on our Discord, but like, in 4 years when he gets cast in True Detective season 6 for his shot at a
you're not wrong.
at a darker, more serious role. We're gonna be like, oh, god damn it, what are they doing to Cousin Greg?
Yeah. Okay, just that's it, though. Just avoid that, Greg. That's all you have to do. What's his real name?
Nicholas Braun.
Nicholas, do not go do True Detective Season 6. Whenever Paparazzi or whatever his last name is calls you up, all teed up off an eight ball,
yeah.
Do not agree, sir. It's just not worth it. But ride the Vince Vaughn track for sure. That's like at least three classic movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And a permanent place in the pop culture lexicon.
Right, right, yeah.
Which absolutely. He might already honestly have just as Cousin Greg alone.
I think he really does. I think he really does.
Is that enjoyable of a character?
Yeah.
What's his boy's name that's married to Shiv now, the poor bastard?
That is Tom. Tom Wamsgams.
Tom Wamsgams is in the worst spot of anybody here because, like, him and his wife fucking hate each other.
He hates her more than he hates her.
He's
now.
Resentful at this point because it's pretty clear she doesn't really give a shit about mm-hmm. him. Like, it's the impression I have gotten of with the Shiv-Tom relationship is it could have been pretty much anybody. She needed somebody to fill the role
right.
so that she could continue to do her thing and maybe have another pawn to use. And yeah. that's basically what he is for her, is another piece on the board.
Yeah.
When she gets the call on the plane, hustle, baby. She's, like, getting him, whipping him at. Like, it's just, there's such a weird relationship at this point.
Yeah.
And Tom just really, if you look at everybody else, they've got something going. Tom is just in a position to take shit and be a fall guy. Like, it was interesting to me also. One of the reasons I think that daddy fucking head of the clan, Brian Cox's character, might be dealing with some brain issues.
Head of the Roy clan.
Head of the Roy clan.
For our listeners.
Not the Ku Klux clan. Different yep. clan. Different clan. Roy clan.
A family clan. Not a
Not a racist clan.
Not a racist organization.
Not a hate group. Not a hate group.
Organizational clan.
Whenever Tom spoke up in that meeting and Brian Cox turns around like, oh, you're going to bring, you're going to share your thoughts? What do you think about you, Tom? I don't think that old man has much left in the tank. And what he identified there was the opportunity to engage in one of the few things his brain is capable of anymore, which is like, well, clearly it's not going to be fucking Tom. So let's turn around and shame this dude a little bit, shall we? But yeah, it's Tom's the only character at this point where I'm like, what are they doing with you? Are you going to end up flipping? Are you going to be like an informant?
Yeah, he's got to go. I think Tom has to end up going double agent, right, with Greg.
Because Greg's mom got cut off.
He'll be the man on the inside or something.
To be clear, Greg and his mom have been completely cut off by Babe Pig in the City.
Yeah, yeah.
They're done, which is crazy, bro. That was the, like, when that got brought up last season, we were like, is he going to do it? Is he not going to do it? Like, staying with these people is an insane move if you're guaranteed 100 M's. He stayed.
Yeah.
And not only did he get cut off, his mom got cut off. And not only that, she can't stop ordering fucking juicers. And she's not even drinking the juice. He's got to cancel the cards, Barrett. His mom's got a spending problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Greg's got a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
Which is why I guess the beard is coming.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love He's really going to be regretting that. That feels like a regret beard. Regret for not taking his 100 M's. Was it 100 or was it 10?
Does it matter at this point? Look at these people.
No.
You
no,
think he's doesn't. Walking out of here with anything?
I think it was 100. I think it was 100 million.
I'm pretty sure it was 100 million. And I am going to be shocked if this season doesn't end with major indictments from the government. Like, I think they hinted at it a lot and touched on it a lot in this episode. Has the government reached out to you yet? Nope. Haven't heard from the government yet. Nobody really knows, and we saw in the preview,
yeah.
The government is coming.
Yeah.
And Logan's dumbass is going to try to ask them if they can come back tomorrow.
These are the type that don't fuck off.
The feds don't come back tomorrow, bro. Man, he has so much. I thought they tried to paint that picture of his power, though, with the call with the president.
Right. Yeah, that was all really good. Again, like you already said, like when they just do the industry stuff, when they get to the nitty gritty of like, how the head of Fox News, how the literal CEO of like a Fox News type entity would get in touch with the president, but not really the president, but the president's person, one of his
like
or her
sitting
people.
Next to the president.
Yeah, and the way that they would have that conversation, it was all like they do that stuff so well. So of course, like I'm absolutely ready, you know, to continue this season and have a lot of fun with it. That does not change my overall concern with how they're managing plot.
Yeah, I have faith.
In this season and then beyond.
I have faith, but concerns.
One of the things that you got to, like, I think the aces in the hole, right, are that Kendall and Greg have the papers.
Indeed.
And Logan has the manslaughter on Kendall.
He does.
And so here's what I hope does not happen. I hope that Kendall doesn't get like two steps away from dropping the bomb. And then Logan says, how do you feel about going to jail for manslaughter? Because that's my next card to play.
It feels so obvious, right? That's coming.
And then Kendall says, okay. My dad was right. He had the better plan. And then backs off again. Like, fuck that. If it's going to go that direction, which, like you said, seems a little obvious, then, like, I just want all-out warfare. Like, you know, mutually assured destruction.
Prove it. And you're going to admit you covered up a murder?
Yeah.
That's what you're telling me, old man? Let's go to court, then.
Let's go all the way with the bombshells if that's going to be the crux.
Yeah, I'm sick of these kids being scared of this old man, too, bro. Yeah. Like, Roman on the phone, like, maybe it's Roman time. And if it's not, like, you gave up that quickly, bro? Like, you really folded. That was his shot right there. You heard the old man when he got off the phone. Roman's out. So before that call, he's genuinely considering this buffoon.
Yeah, for being a bunch of sharks swimming around in this snow globe, in this tank, the kids outside of Kendall, and Kendall a lot of the times too, they just pussyfoot around.
They're terrible
so
sharks.
Much. They're very, very timid when it comes to this fight, to this battle that they're, you know, that they're waging.
Even Brian, I mean, it's
at least
like,
Kendall wants to put it on his dad. At least he wants to, like, you know, stomp on some throats. He just can't figure out how to exactly do it.
Logan is even failing to, like, go full cutthroat with it, though. And the thing he told Kendall was, you have to be a killer.
You have to be a killer.
You aren't a killer.
You're not a killer.
And then he goes and kills him, and we end season two with what? Logan's half smile of approval.
Yeah.
Of like, it's like below the senile old dinosaur who can't stop, he recognizes that his son has finally done what he wanted him to do.
Yeah.
And then in season three, it's like, just kidding, back to the fucking war rooms, and he's flying all over the place, looks like a total psychopath trying to avoid extradition and shit.
I mean, to play devil's advocate on myself.
Yes.
The ending of season two did set this up. This is what it set up. It set up a massive legal battle
between Logan and
indictments and feds coming and
you're right.
Like,
you're right.
So in, you know, to that end, we shouldn't really be surprised that this is the plot of season three.
You're right.
But at the same time, it's like,
come on.
I feel like we've done this.
Can we come on? We earned
more
than this.
So I'm interested to see how they make it interesting, how they make it different this time around.
If I had to bet, I'd say we get more interesting. I'm gonna put my faith in these writers.
I agree.
They
I
made
agree.
The BoJack reference,
that's
Barrett.
What, I know they did.
I think we're gonna be okay. But with you through episode one, man, we were on the same page where I was like, I finished and I was like, I'm happy to be back. Really excited to talk to Barrett and the Clam fam about this. But also, man, I hope they get more creative through this season because how many more episodes we got?
Nine.
They're doing full 10, huh?
Full 10.
Yeah, so like, we need multiple bodies if they're gonna go full 10 and it just be Logan versus Kendall. Just saying that up front now. Excited to watch Succession, season three with y'all throughout. And we'll, of course, be back next week. I think on Monday, Barrett and I are trying to work them in. Recording's late Monday, so you'll probably get your episodes late Monday evening or early Tuesday morning covering Succession moving forward. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp can help. It assesses your needs and matches you with your own licensed professional therapist. And I've been in therapy for over a decade. I can tell you it is extremely, extremely helpful. BetterHelp is the most easily accessible version of therapy that I have found and is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. So they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. But for a lot of people who I talk to, the issue is that they can't find one in their area that they like, or they can't find one in their area that serves their needs. That's where BetterHelp can be phenomenal as well. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online with a broad range of expertise available, which, again, may not be locally available in many areas. It's available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor after you get matched, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, depending on what you're comfortable with. Point being, you don't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as you would with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to making sure that this, I guess, untraditional version of therapy is much less expensive than traditional offline counseling. Financial aid is also available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. BetterHelp.com/dragon. That's B-E-T-T-E-R, BetterHelp.com/dragon to join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Special offer for the Clam Fam. You get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/dragon. That's 10% off. Go get yourself the BetterHelp you want and need and deserve today. BetterHelp.com/dragon. Barrett, I started watching Dope Sick on Hulu.
This is on Hulu.
Speaking of help.
Michael Keaton starring?
Yeah. Michael Keaton, bro, on a Hulu show. And it's about the opioid crisis in the United States, which is just such an upper.
And you can't get enough of it.
Can't get enough of it.
You watch the documentary, now you're neck deep in Dope Sick.
I'm not neck deep. That's the story I have to tell today. I went toes in. I watched episode one, and I'll be honest with you, it is very, very good, very well made, very interesting, and I'm interested, but I cannot. Alas, I cannot. Essentially, the setup is this, and if you've watched the HBO documentary Crime of the Century, then you have enough familiarity with how the opioid crisis unfolded to get a general feel for what it might attack.
Yeah.
But it's so on-the-nose painful. Story-wise, here's the setup. Michael Keaton is a doctor in a small town, small mountain town. These are blue-collar folk. They're hardworking folk. They're in the mines, Barrett. Mostly miners. They're down there mining. And even the kids are mining. And some of those kids are gay. And they're mining down there, and they're gay, and they want to get the fuck out of that mountain town because all mountain people are against gays, and they got to get out of the mountain town. And that's just that.
Yeah.
And
okay.
But the thing is about these mountain folk, they get hurt doing these hard jobs, Barrett. They're down there in the mines, swinging the pickaxes like Zoolander, and they get hurt. And when they get hurt, they need pain medication.
I think I got the black lung, Pop.
And you can't miss work if you get the black lung. That's
right.
The thing.
Yeah.
They need the paychecks, though, for real. So the point is, they can't miss work, and they can't work with pain. And at the same time, is that sort of already an obvious issue, just in, I guess, in hardworking blue-collar areas of the world since time immemorial, as Tony would put it. This douchebag pharma family, the Sackler family, as we now know them, essentially had a product that was not performing the way they thought it would or could if they found a way to make it more broadly applicable to a wider range of treatments for the general public. Essentially, so more doctors could prescribe it to more people.
Yep.
That product was called OxyContin. And they took what the already existing Contin system, and they put it in a time-release capsule, and they packaged it, and they sold it as a medication, a pain medication for breakthrough pain, okay? The story from there is that the whole damn country got addicted to pain medication. OxyContin became a huge street drug, caused massive issues, and since then, the pharma company that made it has had to pay billions of dollars in fines. The thing that the show gets into is essentially their strategy that they executed to make this happen, to create the opioid crisis, to get as many people as addicted to this medicine as possible, and to sell it as non-addictive. So what you have to watch happen on Dope Sick is this young, upstart, you know, well-to-do salesman that just got hired by whatever pharma company, it's slipping my mind at the moment, they're all evil, you watch him go through training. You watch him get the sales pitch on how they're going to sell doctors on OxyContin. And then you watch him go meet with Michael Keaton in episode one and pitch him on it. And Keaton is suspicious, but by the end of the episode has given someone, I'll just stay as spoiler-free as possible from here on out, some Oxy. The writing is on the wall that what you're going to watch on Dope Sick is this entire fucking town crumble and die.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to watch every single one of these people get addicted to OxyContin, and a lot of them are going to die. And that's the show. And it's going to be brutally real. They have painted the picture through one episode that this is not going to stray from the brutality of the opioid crisis.
They're using all the real names, Sacklers and OxyContin, the drug, and all of that. So I got to think that this is partially based on a true story?
At this point.
Or is this like a fictional retelling of like the type of thing that happened?
Purdue Pharma has pleaded guilty to criminal wrongdoing related to Oxy.
Yeah.
The problem that came from this is the government essentially gave the Sackler family immunity. None of them are going to get in any trouble at all. Not any real trouble. But I had the same question regarding the legality of this entire situation. Like, how is it they're not just getting sued off the face of the earth for putting this story out there, for visualizing this whole, what we know about it anyway?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you got a lot of what they're using out of the documentaries that exist and out of the things that I've read and that exists in print form. But certainly they're going to paint with some entertaining strokes here.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm sure that they have that they've got some license there. But just curious if, like, this guy that, you know, Dr. Samuel Phoenix, is he a real person, essentially?
Right.
Since the Sacklers are real people.
And that's a good question. I'm looking it up now. Isn't a real person.
Okay.
But might as well be, it says.
Yeah. So they've taken the type of story that was happening and
basically
put it into this.
He is representative of any number of doctors that could have gotten caught up in the opioid crisis.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
But what I'm interested in is his character. It's framed up like he's testifying. And certainly at some point, enough doctors had to admit wrongdoing for there to be any room in court for this to actually work. And that's basically what it's framed up. He is willing to go to court and say, like, this was bad.
Yeah.
And I made mistakes.
Yeah.
And I'm curious which doctors they took that inspiration from, because there had to have been real life ones. Anyway, it's not something I'm going to be delving into right now.
Okay.
Looks really good.
You're going to put a pin in it?
I just know enough already. I watched the HBO doc.
It's
already like a sensitive thing for me to watch addicts. Like, it just creeps me out. So I don't know, man.
Yeah. The show, I love most of the stuff on Hulu and Hulu on FX and like that whole, I feel like they're putting out really quality high end stuff.
Michael Keaton.
The trailers look very interesting and compelling, and the show looks like it was done really well and produced and filmed and all that type of stuff. I haven't jumped in because you know, the content is just not exactly what I'm looking for at the moment. I think I'd almost rather watch the documentary.
I was honestly thinking, like, who is the target audience here? And I think it has to be, like, people who don't really know much about that situation that unfolded that are interested, or people who were personally impacted by it that want something to help explain it to them.
Yeah.
Because for me, like, for you're saying, man, I don't really have a whole lot of motivation to go put myself through this. I didn't make OxyContin. If I did, I feel like I should be forced to watch this.
Well, and it's you think about this type of content, right? And I think we referenced on our Sopranos Patreon episode last week, movies like Requiem for a Dream or Trainspotting that deal with heavy drug addiction, especially as it relates to opioids. And those are movies. Those are, you know, compact stories that end in 2 hours in one sitting.
And you can be in the mood for that shit.
Right.
But I won't watch Requiem.
But when we talk about episodic television, 8 hours of this, essentially, that you have to say, okay, next one. Here we go.
And honestly, it was the most devastating part of the documentary was having to watch the actually sick people. The footage that they did have was from, like, family members who had been like, okay, this isn't fucking right. I'm going to film my mom. And that was damn it. That stuck with me.
Yeah.
Damaging. I'm not trying to like absorb. That's the whole series.
Right. Right.
You're going to have to watch.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, it feels like punishment TV. It's like, but I don't work at Purdue Pharma. Why am I watching the show right now?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm out on Dope Sick, but for those of you who do need the lesson or haven't learned about this shit, there's this, and then there's the documentary, the Crime of the Century. I would pick one or the other. You don't need both.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same thing they're covering. Huge news with The Great.
Yeah, speaking of Hulu.
Gillian Anderson.
Yes.
Coming in for season 3, huh?
Amazing.
She's the mother now?
No, she's something. We don't know what she is.
I saw a picture of her and it just said mother.
She's a mother. I don't
Someone's
know. She's
mother.
Some type of regal mother. But is it Gillian? Is it Gillian Anderson?
I don't think so.
Or is
so.
It Gillian Anderson?
I think it's Gillian.
It's Gillian, right?
I think it's Gillian.
I think you're thinking of Gillian Flynn, the author of Sharp Objects and Gone Girl, who goes by Gillian.
I mean, no disrespect, but if you spell your name G-I-L-L-I-A-N, I can't not say Gillian. Gillian.
Okay.
But I think it's Jillian.
I think it's Jillian. All-timer already just by nothing else but the X-Files.
And then you stack Sex Education on top of that.
Sex Education on top of that.
Which people are obsessed with.
Yeah, so good. And she's amazing in it. And then two seasons, or at least one season on the, one season of The Crown, which she just won an Emmy for, playing Margaret Thatcher in a rainy shower. What is it? Margaret Thatcher in a cold shower.
Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day.
Oh, yeah.
Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day.
The Iron Lady.
Oh, yeah.
And then, and now she's popping up in The Great. She's just like making the rounds on all the best TV shows out there. And you want to get me excited for something, take an already great TV show, add Jillian / Gillian Anderson to it. Like,
baby, you got a stew going.
Baby, you got a stew going. I'm stoked for this.
Dude, it reminded me of like a super team adding another all-star,
yes,
though.
Yes.
Like, where
no,
I was like,
100%.
Oh, cool. They just won the championship and now they get LeBron. That didn't seem fucking fair.
Yeah. And so this is a good opportunity that, just to talk to our listeners that if you weren't following us, last year for any type of reason, or maybe you like just came back because of the, Fire and Blood trailer, which got you back interested in the podcast.
House of the Dragon.
The Great, FX on Hulu. What we, Ross and I each had it as our top show of 2020 last year.
It was
our favorite show.
Unbelievably good.
So go, and season two comes out in a month, starts in a month. So if you,
oh, you'll burn through it, baby.
If you've not watched it, go watch it. Cause it's very, very good.
Okay. So I have it up. She is cast as Johanna and it's Catherine the Great's mother. So basically we only met her parents like very briefly, I think.
Not at all.
Or not at all. Didn't
she
see them?
She's just automatically, she's just already in Russia from wherever she came from.
Then that's
Germany,
what
Germany,
got
Austria,
going
wherever.
She's going to come over and stir the pot in our stew, as it were.
Very exciting. Very exciting.
Huge news, though, that I did not see coming. I didn't know we were going to have major additions.
No.
Thought they were just
going to
roll the same cast.
Yeah.
And nobody told Barrett and I. Nobody picked
What's
up the phone and
that?
Called us and let us in on the inside scoop. So odd. Last thing I'll say today, and then we can head out. New York Post put out this article that kind of made me, like, sad. The headline was, Edie Falco said James Gandolfini was her real soulmate.
Mm.
And I read it, and I was like, damn, that's a crazy thing to say. Is she married? Like, that her husband must be upset. And was James married? Like, I just feel like that could be a potentially upsetting statement. But then I was like, wait a minute. Are they just using this to...
Are they doing the Friends thing again?
They're just plugging... They're trying to get hype.
Yeah.
Right? The same way... Yeah, Jennifer Aniston saying that her and Ross were going to date. It's like... Yeah,
right.
Are you going to date or you need more eyeballs on the Many Saints of Newark?
Yeah, and then there were like rumors that they were like...
Really dating in real life?
Yeah.
And then it turns out they both deny. And it's like, yeah.
There was... Okay, I don't know if this was the same headline, but I got a push notification from one of the things that I get push notifications from. I can't remember what it was. But it was about like how like... Oh, here it goes. Okay, so this is New York Magazine.
Okay.
And the headline, which came at 10 a.m. today and I did not get to read yet, was Playing Tony Soprano Took a Toll on James Gandolfini.
Mm.
Read an excerpt from a new history of HBO. So that could be interesting.
I kind of always assumed that it was probably a bit of an issue for him after the fact because of the lifestyle.
Right.
I mean, that's you kind of get drunk with it, I would feel like. I would probably you're playing that character and tapping into that power, bro.
You know, there's... I think that's always a concern. You know, the most famous example for people of our generation is obviously Heath Ledger playing the Joker.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, when you go deep on a character like that and you're that type of actor where you like that character essentially becomes a part of you and on a TV show no less where you are
over and
playing
over.
It for you know years on years on years. Yeah, it's that's super intense, and you know I don't know what type of actor he was, whether he was like method or something else, but man, you think about like a guy like I don't know, I think about a story like that, and then I'm like, well, I wonder how Bryan Cranston handled it because he seems pretty fucking well adjusted, and so it's like you know what's the difference, like why is it just the personality type? That's probably it.
An ability to cope mostly. It's probably a lot of it's like. therapeutic skills or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, what The Sopranos deals with, as we've discovered on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles, where Barrett and I are covering every single episode of the show. We're working our way through season four right now. Join us, support the podcast, and watch The Sopranos with us. But it's built around, you know, Tony's ability or inability to analyze himself and grow.
Yeah.
Or make change, positive changes and actually...
Yes.
Live a better life or whatever.
Good, very good way to put it.
Just sort of everybody's goal, right? We're all running around trying to like get better day to day, or most of us, or a lot of us. I don't know. My girlfriend believes everyone is always doing their best. And I'm like, that is horse shit. not all the time. So it's interesting to me because I think the thing that separates the people that maybe the Bryan Cranstons from the Heath Ledgers, guys that really get sucked in too deep, and it really impacts their mental health, and you see the fallout, even with Jon Snow. Like, you saw the fallout in Kit Harington just from the fucking character that wasn't even that deep, honestly. He's just brooding a lot.
So much brooding.
That he had actual brooding in real life
it's
taking place.
It's like the thing of, like, if you, like, tell yourself you're sick, if you fake sick for...
You're going to get sick, baby.
You will make yourself sick.
You tell yourself you're depressed every day, or isolated, or alone, or afraid, or whatever you have to do to be these characters, and you will become those things unless you have...
Yeah, unless you
coping
can really,
skills, therapy,
cope with it.
Experience in those realms, which most of us don't have, unless we go seek out those things. So, you know, you never know, man. You never know. But I saw some of those headlines, too, and I wasn't even about, I can't read them. We're still watching the show right now.
Right.
We're too
true.
Deep in the weeds with, I'm loving Tony right now and hating him at the same time because he's a fucking monster, but also a cute, cuddly teddy bear that I just want to hug.
Yeah.
And run from immediately after I hug him.
I've been thinking about the comparison because, you know, when we, there has been more talk about The Sopranos recently, obviously, with Many Saints of Newark release and the New York Times article that was posted about, like, younger people rewatching the show now.
Why are
and, like,
so
how,
many Gen Z kids watching The Sopranos?
Yeah, how they feel about it compared to how people felt about it 20 years ago. And I was thinking about a little bit of this, like, lead up to Succession. Because one of the things that like was grating on me a bit was that like the consensus around Succession is that everybody loves this show. We called it fun. It is fun. But at the same time, like it is glamorizing a lifestyle that is very clearly supposed to be shown in a light that is not good. These people are bad people.
You know what I
right?
described
and,
this
and
as?
And I remember, like, David Chase was trying to tell you that Tony was a bad person. This guy's not growing. He can't figure it out.
The
he
last episode you
together.
And I covered was too much television.
Yeah.
David Chase routinely throws in lines almost telling you, like,
right.
you're the fucking problem watching right now.
And so I got that vibe a little bit. Like, people love these characters right now, and they're really, like, they love this shit. We love talking about the businessisms of it all. But at the end of the day, like, this is, we're not supposed to aspire to these people. We're not supposed to want this lifestyle that they have.
You
want to
know what it's
at
like?
At least not, at least on the scale, we're supposed to come down on, like, this looks awful. This is bad. This is not good.
When Dave Chappelle bailed for Africa, it was because the show jumped the shark in the wrong way. He felt like he was enabling racists to make inappropriate racial jokes that they did not have the right to make. When he's running down the street and people are yelling fucking jokes from episode one at him where they have the black blind Klansman, that shit got to him.
Yeah.
And it's sort of that is the I felt the same thing. And the pandemic definitely shifted the way we as Americans, I think, overall look at the wealthy even more so. Mm-hmm. And billionaires in particular. Like, we watched all the billionaires triple their wealth, and people were really fucking upset about that while the rest of us, the strong majority of Americans, have suffered financially and personally over the past couple years. And so then when you go back to Succession, it feels like that Chappelle thing where it's almost like, oh, fuck. Are we rooting for, like, did it get twisted? Like, cause were we supposed to hate all these people the whole time? And now I'm rooting for a dude who I watched literally
manslaughter somebody
run from the scene of a death crime because he wanted to score some blow.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm now rooting for this dude to become the head of one of the most powerful media companies in the country in this pretend show. What is wrong with me? Yeah. And that's the position Succession has us in.
Yeah.
And if the only battle it has to offer up in that case is Logan and Kendall, I'm just like, damn. Y'all better chill or you're just going to get to a position where it's like dope sick where I just don't need this. Because I know I watch it play out every day on the news.
Yeah, yeah. And again, and I'm sorry because I don't want to take away from the fun of the show. It is a very fun show. That is what we led with here other than like our concern trolling. But it was just something that bothered me about the lead up was like, don't forget that these people are not supposed to be like held up as any type of ideals.
It was a little odd, the lead up. I felt it too. I was like, man, social media is handling this strangely.
It's just, okay, there was never, like, in a lead-up to a Game of Thrones season, it was very communal. Nobody talking about the hype around Game of Thrones was doing so because they wanted you to know that they were watching Game of Thrones.
Which is almost the only thing that happened with Succession.
Yes.
It was Succession signaling.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And I'm watching it too. Oh, I'm watching it too. Yeah. Oh, I'm watching it. Yeah, we're all fucking watching it. Shut up. We're not supposed to like this.
I did drop that tweet and then for a couple of people that replied to it, I kind of like backed off a little bit in a response to them. But like, but some of the things that I wanted to say was like, okay, at this point, let's add Succession to this list. Pizza, coffee, and The Office and tacos. Liking these things is not a personality trait, right?
No.
Isn't that what everybody always said about The Office?
Which is
liking
almost...
The Office is not a personality trait.
And we're at the point where saying that liking The Office is not a personality trait is also not a personality trait.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, or you know, the people buying like mugs about like, don't talk to me until I've had my coffee.
Yeah.
Like these are memes
yeah.
that we've come up with now because people like rode them so hard as like things that defined them.
Right.
I'm adding Succession to that list. We all fucking like this show.
Yeah. We all know it's fun.
It's very good and fun and entertaining.
We all think it's funny when Tom drinks his own cum. Like, yeah. That's hilarious. Like, we all love
so that,
Cousin Greg
that, that's
the same
what
amount.
I, like, there's no doubt that I definitely, part of it was definitely me experiencing, like, the whole, like, I liked this band before they were popular thing.
For sure.
But the other, I'm full and well acknowledging and admitting that.
Hey, I'm right there with you on this one.
But the other piece of it was, like, yeah, we all like this. You're not breaking anything here.
I'm with you.
It
I was
won
like,
all the Emmys. Like everybody figured this out over the pandemic. So
I think
I'm
it
glad
was,
you're on board. It's good for the podcast. Well, welcome if you just figured it out.
Of course. Like, but yeah, universally it was a little weird to see people like I guess we were all just ready for something else, right? Because like we're in between sort of we've just hit this weird place in the streaming world where there's shit dropping constantly and you're just kind of like,
And that piece of it is, of course, very fun. Like I said, like it's whenever there is a consensus show that everybody wants to talk about and watch on Sunday nights, like we love that shit.
And I think that's why the overreaction, though, is because it's like there aren't many examples of consensus shows anymore where it's like this sort of. It came into fruition right after Game of Thrones,
right.
Sort of half carried the torch of like the HBO must-watch Sunday night show, and it's the only one that arguably right now really has that on this mainstream level.
Yeah, and just to note one big difference between it and like the other stuff that kind of everybody kind of rallied around, like White Lotus or The Undoing or Mare of Easttown, which were other big Sunday night shows, like all three of those started out as limited series. We did not expect any more after the one season.
Right.
And they all followed the same path where it was like, some people watched episode one. They said, hey, this is kind of good. We should check this out. And it kind of like, it did the buzz building thing on social media where by the end of it, we were all in. But like, we didn't go into those seasons with everybody being like, we are all about to watch this show.
This is the first season where that's really happened. Yeah.
And so that part of it is, of course, you know, that's great to have back in our lives, especially as, man, I was at the office today, drove in traffic to get here. Like it shit is feeling normal, very, very normal right now. So
too normal for you. Need Succession.
So having a Sunday night show back that everybody's going to talk about will be fun. There's no doubt.
And the way I guilt watch this isn't anything to do with the wealth or the lifestyle. It's more of like the watching them do dumb shit and ruin their lives. That's sort of my angle at this point. Like, yes, I do root for Kendall.
Yep.
But only to beat his dad. I don't actually want him to run the company. Like, fucking God, no, that seems like a terrible idea. I just want him to kill his fucking dad. That's it at this point. I want Kendall to kill his dad, and then I do not care what happens to... And that's, like, honestly, now that we're talking through it, they can never kill this old man. What the fuck does the show become? Who the fuck wants to watch Kendall or Roman or Shiv run that company?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that sounds awful. In fact, now I get it. Yeah, that's it. That's right there. I can't lose that guy.
No. And there. When I was thinking about this today, when I was thinking about talking about this on the podcast, just to close this loop here,
as we
start on Succession and we're ending on Succession, I was trying to think it through, and I came up with a snow globe analogy. Maybe it will work. Maybe they don't have to ever change the plot. Maybe
they can still keep being fun.
Maybe
like that.
This is just what the show is, and it will still be fun to watch all of these. Dipshits, as Connor so lovingly referred to the people that will now go ironically watch his prostitute girlfriend's play.
The dipshits and hipsters.
The dipshits and the hipsters.
His prostitute girlfriend playwright.
Holy shit.
She's so not stoked on that, by the way. He's like, you know, well, so does like this gag thing, like a freak show. And she's just like, okay.
That could be interesting. I was like, okay, I maybe they can do this. Maybe this is what it is, what it's going to be. Like, these people are just constantly spinning their wheels in this
around these
never-ending cycle of like trying to get to the top of the mountain.
And this old man,
and this old man just keeps beating them down back off the mountain. Like,
I mean, it's not an unrealistic metaphor for just America in general right now. Dealing with these damn boomers who won't die.
That's yeah.
They're just fucking with y'all.
Sorry, mom and dad.
Yeah, just joking. My parents too. Love y'all very much, and the Dudleys. All right, yeah. Barry is very good as well. I never mentioned Barry on HBO. I feel like a dick. Barry is a phenomenal HBO television show.
Yeah, very good show.
Yeah.
Very good show. Yeah. I'm sure that one's coming back at some point. Curb on Sunday.
Curb is huge. That's a great show. We'll talk some Curb.
Cop anything from the Curb/Kith drop?
There was a Curb/Kith drop?
Yeah.
Did you talk about this on Club Cool?
No, because it released on Monday, so we've not gotten a shot.
Curb/Kith? No, I didn't. I'm sure resale's super fun, too.
I didn't look... It wasn't like it sold out in seconds, and I had like a long sleeve t-shirt in my cart, and then I was like, do I need a $100 Curb Your Enthusiasm t-shirt?
Okay, no, you don't, but...
And then I said, no, like, come on. Come on, Barrett.
Dude, that's one where you text me and you go, dude, let's get these shirts. Ooh, what is wrong with you? There's only like a few opportunities I have to use the actual company card. Lunch sometimes.
Yeah.
And when you find a dope shirt that we can both wear on the show.
That's true. We could just write. It's a write-off, Jerry. It's a write-off.
Man. All right. Well, I'm wearing my Howler hat next week. You're out. We're rotating. Next week, I get a Howler hat. I bought three of them. Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah.
I hope the other ones fit you better than the fleece one.
You say better, and I think that's subjective. Because the fleece one... Pharrell thinks it looks great. All right. Love y'all. Thanks for being here. Appreciate you. We'll be back next week with more Succession. I will try to get through Ted Lasso as soon as possible. There's just been a lot going on with the Astros playoffs.
Yeah, I'm glad you noted that. We diverted on the other like kind of pop culture phenomenon shows. You finished Squid Game.
I did.
I finished Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
And we've not finished the other. So when we're both complete with those... We will talk about those.
We'll reconvene.
We'll reconvene on how those wrapped up.
Yeah. We just wanted to get in Oystar Clamco.
Oystar Clamco, yeah.
Board meeting in today.
Absolutely.
Obviously.
Absolutely. That will be the, you know, like we said, consensus show. We're going to talk about it every week. We will have watched the episode. We will be on time with that.
Yeah. Monday evening or Tuesday morning at the latest, y'all will have your Succession recaps moving forward. Thank you again for your patience this week. Holler at Barrett9 social media, at Barrett Dudley, at WR Bolin on Twitter. Let us know what you've thought about Succession Episode 1. Holler at us on Instagram when you see posts. Get in the Discord. Go to Patreon. The Court is strong. Be back soon. Until our next helping.
Peace.
Adios.